It's Dilemma Day.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
It is time for Too Wretched for Radio. Phil, we have a number... Did I call you Phil? Oh, Swami, we have a number of dilemmas. We need your sage wisdom. That's about all the Eastern terms I can think of. Would you, dear guru, please pontificate? That sounded more Roman. Would you help us out with some stuff that are conundrums? You ready to go?
Things are that bad, huh, that you need my advice.
Well... If you hear a scraping sound, yeah, it's that bad. We've come to you, Phil Johnson. All right, are you ready for dilemma number one? And this is an opportunity to not only hear a dilemma and to discern what the right response is, but also to discern if I'm just sneaking one in here. Mark Driscoll was just being interviewed on somebody's podcast, and Mark Driscoll... who has been recently, besides starting a church in Phoenix, has been hanging out, I would say, mostly in charismatic circles. He recently wrote a goose egg. I'm sorry. It was a book on the Holy Spirit. Didn't do very much. Nevertheless, he continues to find himself being interviewed on this podcast and that. And he said this, Phil, I will play the clip. You say stop when you wish to comment so we can figure out just where do we think Mark Driscoll is headed. Are you ready to go, sir?
I am ready.
Here he is.
Reformed theology is I have a dad who is powerful. He is in charge. He's non-relational. He lives far away. And don't make him mad.
Good. I'm glad you did. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, non-relational? Where does he get that? I mean, he is... I've heard this clip, and it sort of irritates me because I know that he understands Calvinism better than he lets on in what he's saying here. He's trying to do a Freudian analysis of Calvinists, and he does a very poor job of it. Doesn't explain actually how he's moved from where he was 10 years ago when he was portraying himself as the chief spokesman for the young, restless, and reformed. Yes.
Pick me. Osage, pick me.
Okay, yes, sir.
He had to leave that camp because that camp has said, sorry, you're not qualified to be a pastor anymore.
Yeah.
So what realm is left for him? There, that's where he has to go, Phil.
Yeah, sadly, I think you're exactly right.
Cynical, but right.
Yeah, it's a pragmatic shift on his part. And in fact, it was not unforeseeable. I myself predicted it, not because I had any kind of special prophetic wisdom or whatever,
but because you're a guru.
No, it's because I know the trends of church history. I've seen what's happened just in the time that I've been a Christian. There are young guys who jump on whatever is popular at the moment. And Mark Driscoll became reformed, and I do that with the air quotes. He became reformed or professed to be reformed almost exactly the same time that Time magazine chose Calvinism as one of the up-and-coming thought ideas that was going to shape coming society. And I said at the time, I hate to see Calvinism become a fad, because what's going to happen is a lot of borderline Christians are going to jump on the bandwagon, claim to be Calvinists, probably hang around Calvinism and profess Calvinistic ideas for 5 or 10 years, and then they'll have to renounce it when the next fad comes along, and they'll end up being anti-Calvinistic. And, Mark Driscoll was sort of the poster boy for that group. He wanted to make himself the chief spokesman for the young, restless, and reformed. And now he's the chief critic. He's about to say, you haven't played it yet, but I'll... can I do a spoiler? He's about to say that Calvinism is garbage. Which is about as, it's typical Mark Driscoll style crassness, but it also, I think, shows very clearly his own hypocrisy. How can you go from claiming to be the spokesman for this idea and then 10 years later saying it's garbage without any kind of rational reason why you've changed your, or biblical reason why you've changed your theological opinions. He makes no biblical argument here. He does a Freudian analysis, and it's all bad. And I don't really want to hear it. But you're going to keep playing it, aren't you?
This is why you make the big bucks as the official wretched guru. Now, this particular clip of him caricaturing, really, Reformed theology would be as unfair as the other side saying, you know, the God of Mark Driscoll, he's just a sappy, namby-pamby, wimpy, huggy, squishy, just loves to listen to the Backstreet Boys kind of God. They would go, now, wait a second. Don't present it that way. This is one of the poorest ways that either, no matter who you are in Christendom, don't engage in a debate on a theological issue by strawmanning the other side.
Yeah.
It doesn't help. It doesn't get you to where you want to go. And it's the lowest form of argument there is.
No, that's right. And if I could make another prediction, my prediction is this is not going to work very well for Mark Driscoll. He's now in that group of one-time celebrities in the evangelical world who morally disqualified themselves and then desperately tried to make a comeback to gain the sort of influence they once had. And I don't know of any of them who've ever been successful at that. He will never have more than a fragment of the audience that he craves and is used to. And by doing this kind of thing, he just further discredits himself. It makes his hypocrisy and dishonesty just all too transparent, so that even those who would be inclined to give him more than the benefit of the doubt and bend over backwards to put the most charitable spin on everything he says, people have been doing that with him for 15 years. But I think he's played out all the fishing line on that one, you know, and it's just not going to take him any further. He's not going to gain anything by this.
This is the interview that Mark Driscoll had, just within days, really, changing his theological tune.
Reformed theology is I have a dad who is powerful. He is in charge. He's non-relational. He lives far away. And don't make him mad because he can get angry really fast and hurt you.
Right.
I think I've gone so far as to say, stop. I think the whole young, stop. Restless reform movement, Time Magazine said I was one of the thought leaders.
Phil! He didn't even say anything new yet.
Well, no, he did. He said, and he can hurt you. He can get angry really fast, and he'll hurt you really bad.
okay, fine.
All right. I just wanted to point out that is, I was going to say borderline, but it's not really borderline. That's blasphemy. That is a blasphemous accusation against the God that Mark Driscoll once professed to believe in. It's blasphemy. It's that bad. I mean, it makes me angry to hear that. Because he so misrepresents God. It's not just Calvinism that he misrepresents. A lot of people misunderstand and misrepresent Calvinism. I think most Calvinists are accustomed to that. But to denigrate God as someone who gets angry really easily and you know, practically loves to hurt you, is to utterly misrepresent everything Scripture says and everything historic Calvinism has ever taught.
All right. This is now he segues into what you alluded to earlier, Phil. Mark Driscoll, as the former spokesperson for the Young, Restless, and Reform movement. I'm not doing this to torture you by repeating it.
No, I'll let it
Reformed
play.
Reformed theology is I have a dad who is powerful. he is in charge. He's non-relational. He lives far away. And don't make him mad because he can get angry really fast and hurt you.
Right.
I think I've gone so far as to say, I think the whole Young, Restless, Reform movement, Time Magazine said I was one of the thought leaders that helped create that. I don't hold to the 5 points of Calvinism. I think it's garbage, but.
All right, we'll go just stop right there. Was he or was he not one of the thought leaders of the Young, Restless, and Reform movement?
Well, I frequently argued that he is not. He portrayed himself that way. He loved to point out the fact that he was named in that Times Magazine article, and he almost immediately began to pretend that he was the one who spoke for all young Calvinists. That really irritated me because I think he always had a twisted form of Calvinism, and I never was really clear on where he stood on the atonement, substitutionary atonement. At times he defended the idea, And other times it sounded like, you know, he believed in a kind of universal atonement. I really don't know where he's at, except that if you just survey the whole course of his lifetime and ministry, it's clear that he changes very easily. He's chameleonic. He was, for a while, wanting to portray himself as the spokesperson for the emerging church movement. And that, of course, became very liberal and Socinian, and it didn't fit with his sort of macho style. So he switched, and I think he thought Calvinism was a much more macho kind of theology. And so he taught this sort of exaggerated machismo in all of his Calvinistic teaching. I was criticizing him even then, saying this is not a reflection of genuine historic Calvinism. But he understood enough to that we know that right now he's simply deliberately misrepresenting what Calvinism is and not really being honest about how much he's changed and why.
You know, wouldn't it be interesting if you could sit down with Mark without even desiring to engage in a debate and simply ask that question, Phil? That would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Mark, here are the clips from your sermons past. And now you're saying that what you used to believe is, quote, garbage. Just tell me about that transition. When did it start? What verses persuaded you? Who were you listening to? Where did that come from? I think if nothing else, it would be fascinating to hear, because you're right. There's no explanation here. There's just an assumed, it's a stupid way to read the Bible. This is the conclusion.
So blog about that. But anyways, because it's not biblical, but nonetheless.
Okay, stop. Stop right. Yeah. Two things there, he said, and I want to comment on both of them. So blog about that. He knows he's going to get criticized for this. And so he throws that out there. You know, it's like, bring it. Come on. He's looking at this point for the controversy.
You silly blogger people.
Yeah, he's going to denigrate his critics and thinks that he will benefit off the controversy because, frankly, he always has been able to stir controversy in a way that, you know, benefits him. It's when he receded from the limelight and got out of the controversy that he began to lose followers. And I think he thinks that rather than the gospel and the teaching of the Word of God, what is going to put him back into the limelight is if he picks a fight with the right people or the wrong people or whatever. So he's basically trying to pick a fight here. So go ahead and blog about that is his way of saying, bring it. I know you're going to criticize me for that. I know that what I just said is outrageous, so bring it. And then he follows that up with, it's not biblical, but he's not going to give any reasons why he thinks it's not biblical. He's catering to an audience who wants to hear that it's not biblical, and they're willing to believe that without any kind of biblical argument or you know, rational or theological evidence. Just because he says it, he thinks, you know, he's gathering an audience of people who that's what they want to hear. And he's probably right about that. I don't think it's going to be a huge audience, and I don't think he's ever going to regain the sort of influence he once had. I think that's a good thing for the church, frankly.
Now, this is the conclusion of his interview.
That whole young, restless reform, God is Father, but he's distant, he's mean, he's cruel, he's non-relational, he's far away. Mm. That's their view of their earthly father. So then,
well, wait a second. That's our view of our earthly father. So it did get Freudian. You were right, Phil.
Yeah, and it's that's also just another gross misrepresentation of what Calvinists teach about God. We don't believe he's distant.
But you know what? What that comment, though, Phil, and you said something earlier that got me thinking down this road. That's his second comment that's a bit Gnostic. And we see a lot of Gnosticism these days in evangelical Christianity. I know your heart, Phil. You don't know your heart, but I do. You don't know how you viewed your father, but I'll tell you.
Yeah.
There seems to be a trend of the assumption that I know what's going on in your psyche, as if they're Gnostic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, plus it's just a lie. I could speak from personal experience. I had a great father, have a great father. He's 94 years old, just had his 94th birthday. And he's never been distant, remote, mean, or any of those things that Mark just said. I love him dearly. And he is a perfect representation of the character of God to our family. I mean, perfect as much as a man can be. He's obviously, you know, not sinless, but he's none of those things that Mark Driscoll just said. And I can tell you with certainty that I am not attracted to the idea of a God who is aloof or mean spirit or any of those things that he was implying. And it's just a ridiculous statement. He says it with that rapid fire Mark Driscoll delivery so that it goes by so fast. And he says it so glibly that it doesn't really give you any room for argument or thought. You just sort of take it in and he's off to the next thought.
Yeah. So your one anecdote, you had a good dad who wasn't the type of God that Mark Driscoll is suggesting you follow. See, if his projection method that somehow we've created God to match our earthly father, that's our view of our earthly father, if that were the case, then God would be a really bad alcoholic in my case. So clearly, his Freudian projection model isn't very good.
No, it's not.
Let's see if we can get to the end of this interview.
They pick dead mentors,
right?
Spurgeon, Calvin, Luther. These are little boys with father wounds. Mm.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. These are little boys with father wounds. Come on.
It's interesting because it wasn't that long ago that Driscoll himself was saying that he trusted the dead guys more than the living guys because they're not going to embarrass you. They've finished well already, and there is some wisdom in that. You know, it's true that I've a great deal of more respect for some of the older theologians who wrote well and wrote deeply than I do with some of the superficial stuff that's being published today. But it has nothing to do with father issues.
Little boys with father wounds. Boy, now, there are undoubtedly some people who are going to hear this, Phil, and say, we're being kind of mean to Mark Driscoll. Did we all just kind of process and hear what Mark Driscoll said about us, and more than that, what he said about God? And before you maybe get upset with our response to this, please process that little presentation, that caricaturization that Mark just gave about us.
Who are looking for spiritual fathers, so they pick dead guys who are not going to actually get to know them or correct them.
Right.
And then they join networks run by other young men so that they can all be brothers. There's no fathers.
Right.
And they love Jesus because they love the story where the son is the hero.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
because they're the sons.
Stop. I wonder how much of this is actually a personal confession on his part and therefore would explain why his professions of faith from 10 years ago turned out to be not genuine or permanent faith. The other thing, Todd, the speed with which he delivers this suggests to me that he's given some thought to these ideas. He's been brooding about this. He's made up this narrative, and it is a made-up narrative. I don't think you'd find any credible theological analyst who would look at different theologies and why certain people hold to different doctrines and all that, and agree with Mark Driscoll's assessment. It may be true in his case that he embraced Calvinism for a while because somehow it fit with his own hurt psyche and father issues. I don't know. But for him to project that on all young Calvinists is as about as uncharitable as it can get.
You know what? Okay, when you listen to it, you know, that rapid-fire delivery, Phil, indicates Mark Driscoll is not a stupid man. You know, he's clearly an intelligent fellow. And so for him to take, just set it apart from Christianity, set it apart from what feels like a personal critique, that's just poor argument. That's just bad debate tactics. And so to me, that's just below what should be his standard. I mean, I can disagree with the fellow all day long, but it's like, come on, at least elevate the argument where it's at least somewhat considered. That was just a hash. And if nothing else, Phil, we really can learn from that to not return the favor. Because too often we do have a tendency to sometimes enter into a debate without really fully knowing the other side, fairly representing the other side. There's a temptation to do that. He just committed that in spades, whether it's willful or ignorant. And I just don't want to be guilty of that very same thing, because that's, to me, just listening, it's pretty off-putting.
It is, and I think it's off-putting for most people who hear it. I don't know if you've watched the Twitter response and the online feedback to this interview, because it got a little bit of play here and there on Facebook and Twitter, and I really didn't see anyone responding to what he did here in a positive way. I didn't see anybody saying, oh, he's right, or, you know, you people who are criticizing him are picking on him. It was more the sort of, you know, farewell Rob Bell style response. I think he's probably undoing whatever long-term support he might have had from anyone, which, again, is a good thing.
Well, he has to find another home, because he knows that he would not be accepted at that level. Now, if he were truly repentant of it, then he would still be in the same camp, because that's where he would belong.
Right.
But he doesn't, and he knows it, so he's simply looking to find himself another place where he can continue to do whatever it is that he's trying to do. So, Phil, do you know what that is?
Oh, I hope it's not more of this same kind of thing.
No, it's all of the dilemmas that we were going to get to with you until we listen to a 1-minute and 4-second clip of Mark Driscoll. So do you know when we're going to get to these little dilemmas right here? Answer next time.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?